Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Girl, real talk. This whole "it's new year, time to reinvent myself" trash is not the vibe for 2024. You can find someone who loves you for you, as you are. You don't need to read a stack of self-help books, only eat sad salads, or like start meditating at 5 a.m. to be ready for dating. So yeah, my advice is to download Bumble and find someone who embraces you the way you are right now. Let me know how it goes.
Before, I had been quite paralyzed or held back by the anxiety about like what someone might think about something that I wrote. But to kind of get to the point where like that was less important than just saying it at all was a really big shift. And it was big, but it was so like subtle that I don't think I even really noticed it until like right now as we're talking. I realized that change had occurred.
I'm Jordan Kissner, author of the essay collection Thin Places. And this is Thresholds, a weekly series of conversations with writers and artists about moments of epiphany or transformation that changed their lives and their work. A moment that they stepped across, like a threshold, into something new. And the way that experience changed everything they wrote afterward.
Alyssa Song Siriday is an editor at Electric Literature and the author of the novel Little Rabbit, which was a National Book Foundation 5 Under 35 honoree this year and was shortlisted for the Center for Fiction First Novel Prize. Little Rabbit is about a relationship between a younger woman who is aspiring to be a writer and a much older, famous ballet choreographer. The relationship is the narrator's first exposure to dom-sub dynamics, something she both wants and feels bad about wanting. And the relationship also alienates her from some of her closest friends. Alyssa came on the podcast to talk about leaving her home of many years, Philadelphia, to move to Boston, and the way that getting out of her context and getting away from her friends and farther from her family and into a space of slight alienation and solitude freed her to write in a way she'd never felt able to before, to write about relationships and write about sex, to write about domination and other conflicted desires. We talked about that and so much more. Here's Alyssa Song Siriday.
When I was in my in 2017, in my like late 20s, I moved from Philly to Boston for a few years. And that was like a weirdly, I mean, I say weirdly because people move in the United States sort of all the time. And like my parents have moved very far distances, and transcended like language and culture. Like they moved from Thailand to the Midwest. So I feel almost like a little bit sheepish, like bringing this up as like the big thing in my kind of young adulthood. But like moving from Philly to Boston was a very difficult and but also really important transition in my life. There was like a very clear like logistical reason why we moved, which is my partner got into graduate school. And so we decided to move for him to do that. But before the move, like I think about a year before even we knew that he was, that what school he was going to get into and what we were going to have to do, I was kind of starting to feel like I needed to move, but I couldn't find a reason to, if that makes sense. I moved back to the same neighborhood that I moved away from. So it's sort of funny to talk about in the past tense and the present tense. But like I lived in this very kind of tightly knit, neighborhood in Philly where it's, very like walkable and everyone, it's the kind of place where you could live in and it feels like everyone you know lives within like 10 blocks of you. It felt very like cozy and comfortable. But I was also just having a hard time writing when I was living here at the time. So I had lived in Philly for like my entire adult life. I grew up in Iowa and then I moved here to go to college and then moved into this neighborhood and like stayed in this neighborhood for like about 7 years. And I kind of, growing up, I kind of felt like I was, I mean, everyone kind of looks to other people to find cues on what to do. But I think growing up, I felt like my family especially sort of leaned on other people to figure out what they needed to do and how they should be living their lives because, you know, they moved from Thailand to the US and they didn't really have like they just kind of got thrown into this different culture and this different context. And I remember growing up, like the decision, if I was trying to get permission to like do something, for example, the question would always be like, does your friend, Teresa, just, I'm throwing out a name. Is your friend Teresa, is she going to do that? Like Teresa being someone who's like, they trusted and whose family they trusted. And so I always like try to make sure like imaginary friend Teresa, like was also doing that thing. So my parents would feel like comfortable and safe. Like they were just always kind of asking around, trying to understand what was the thing to be done. And so I carried that kind of with me through my adult life without really realizing it. And that I really kind of unconsciously was really looking to like everyone around me to understand sort of what I needed to be doing or what was the right thing to be doing. And I really wanted, I mean, I really wanted to do the right thing. Like I was I was very preoccupied with like being good and like being fair and those sorts of things. And so like living in the same place for such a long time where it felt like everyone I knew was sort of in that same place. I didn't sort of develop my own instincts about what I wanted or how I like actually like what being good actually like really meant to me. I never quite kind of figured that out for myself. And for like many years, like in my early 20s, it worked out okay. But then I kind of reached this point where I felt like I was reaching the limits of that I had just sort of spun out like the person that I had been for years, and I needed to do something else, but I kind of couldn't figure out what. And so then my partner getting into graduate school was kind of like a convenient reason to move. And so that's why, so I could say like, we're moving for him to do this thing for his career. But that kind of got me into this like bind where I was also, it also, I think, could seem maybe uneven or unfair to people. And so then I had to kind of contend with that too, if that makes sense.
You were describing that kind of like you're reaching the limits around not knowing what being good feels like for you, that kind of like coming up against the edge of feeling like that needed to change or your approach needed to change. What did that feel like? How could you tell?
It was just this kind of like gut anger, I think, actually. I think when I, if I were to like kind of use a word to describe the feeling I was having then, I was kind of feeling this very similar to rage, but I had nothing to be angry at. Well, until the election, then I had something to be angry at. But then, like I was looking for something outside of myself to kind of give me permission to do something different or to do something else. And specifically, I think I was looking for some kind of permission outside of myself to write. Like I had always wanted to be a writer. And my like kind of main ambition at that point was like, I just wanted to write a book that was like read by someone who was not related to me. So like, you know, I like really wanted to do that, but I couldn't do it. Like I just kept on sort of getting in my own way. Like I always kind of found excuses or reasons or other things that I thought like I should be doing. And I don't think I consciously was thinking this. I wasn't like going around, like I was still trying to set aside time to write. I was still trying to do my own work, but I was getting in my way unconsciously in ways I sort of didn't understand, and that I couldn't figure out a way around until I kind of pulled myself geographically out of the place I had been for so long. It also kind of coincided with like a lot of other sort of changes in my life. But one of them being like my partner going to grad school, and we decided to get married. And so like getting married right before we moved, and then showing up in this new place, and then feeling like I was kind of being read by people in a different way, or in a way I was not used to, which I found to be like really sort of challenging.
How so?
Because and I guess this is something that I'm interested in writing about, or that I do write about in the book, but that like that the way I was being perceived by people was not how I felt inside. You know, I had moved for him. He was going to graduate school. We were married. Like there are all these kind of like loaded terms that had sort of meaning for other people, but that I didn't have that same meaning, if that makes sense. Like even right now I'm saying partner, but like also sometimes I say husband, and it's like, well, why do I shy away from one word in some contexts and the other? You know, it's because they have all these kind of connotations that other people would draw from them. And like just sort of the circumstances in which I like arrived in the city had like a connotation that I was like, that I kind of railed against, that I did not like, or I was sort of struggling with.
Do you mean that you felt like there was some perception of you that you were like, you know, the spouse appendage who moved for her husband kind of thing?
Yes, exactly. Okay. Which is, yeah. And it's like something that like, I mean, a lot of people who end up in academic marriages like that is just a little bit part of the life. I mean, like the, there's like the Alexandra Chang book, like Days of Distraction, which I think I kind of pushed on a lot of friends to also read too, because it kind of captures that feeling of following someone and then feeling a little bit lost. And that was like kind of a feeling I had when I arrived at first, was like feeling a little bit lost and having to like make a sort of meaning for myself, if that makes sense. And also kind of pushing against the like narrative of the spouse appendage too, like, because it was like, I also had wanted to move. Like I had wanted to make this change. And like sort of put, like jumped right into it without really thinking very clearly about the ramifications, or like what it would actually like mean to like uproot my life temporarily or not temporarily or whatever. I did have to kind of settle into myself in this way that I had never really experienced before. In my kind of adult life, like I, even just on like a very like day-to-day level, like domestic level, like I had always had like lots of roommates and like I had always like kind of felt surrounded by people in a way that was like nice and comfortable, but could also sometimes feel like surveillance is too strong of a word, but there is like the feeling of like you're presenting a self even to your roommate, or like you're presenting yourself even to your, like your closest friends. And I felt like I suddenly had kind of the freedom to like rethink how I was doing that, which I never really had in my adult life. And so in some ways, so it was like very difficult. And I remember the first year being just sort of like very cranky all the time. And I mean, like just like very, very grumpy. It's also like a very dark, cold, wintry place. It's like, it's a yeah. city that is like famous for people disliking it, I think. And so it was like easy to just kind of like lean into the being cranky about it. But putting myself in that like very uncomfortable situation, I did enable me to like to grow and to change, and like I felt the change in my writing, for example, just kind of like became kind of turbocharged, or just and the way I sort of thought about myself also changed a lot.
Where were you in Little Rabbit during this time? Had you started it yet?
No, definitely not.
Okay.
So I mentioned I was an adjunct, and I spent like a lot of years just writing this novel that was supposed to be like an adjuncting novel. In Little Rabbit, I kind of make fun of the narrators. She's like writing about capitalism. She's like writing these little fragments about capitalism. But that's kind of like exactly what I was doing when I first moved. I was really trying to, like, I had this in my thing in my head that I had to be like political. I had to be like a serious writer. Like I was very against letting myself write about relationships, for example. I never wrote about a romantic relationship until I wrote Little Rabbit, actually. I, even in undergraduate like writing workshops, when it's people do tend to write about romantic relationships because that's sort of the rhythm of your life, I would like refuse to do that. And then when the pandemic happened and when we went to lockdown, and I feel like I retreat, you know, I'm talking about Boston being a little bit of a retreat from the world. And then, you know, the lockdown was like an even further retreat. And I did have a moment of being like, wait, where did I get this feeling that I needed to like write in this way in order to be like a quote unquote serious writer? Like where did that come from? And like, why have I been holding myself to it for so long, in such a way that like I was writing in a way that wasn't giving me kind of any pleasure, you know? And I still like to read kind of more like fragmentary works, but writing that way was very not fun for me. It was like I was kind of harming my own writing by holding that idea in my head. So when lockdown kind of happened, I was able to sort of pause. And I guess what I'm talking about now with like the moving being really important was because the lockdown being a threshold and an important moment, was they were all sort of moments where I had to pause the way I was currently living. And it gave me an opportunity to kind of take a look at like these things, these notions that I was like moving forward with. So when lockdown happened, I was able to pause and sort of look at the structure I was trying to make my writing fit, and to ask myself, like, why do I think of this as being quote unquote serious writing? And realizing like had, you know, that it was all this kind of inherited garbage, basically, that was not helping me. Like this, this feeling that I couldn't write about a relationship, like that, even though like relationships are just very important, you know, they're the things that sort of not just romantic relationships, but also friendships, you know, they're the things that kind of give your life its texture and its atmosphere. And I think part of the having those, the physical aspects of those relationships taken away in lockdown also, I think, kind of emphasized that importance to me and made me realize just like that I had been holding myself back from doing this for like kind of no reason at all. And that like, I just had to sort of flush the garbage in my head, you know, like if you think there's that like line, there's this part in like Sheila Hetty's like, How Should a Person Be? Where she kind of realizes like, she's like the old man, like yelling at her. I think I'm quoting it slightly wrong, but it was like, I kind of realized I had like an old man in my head who was just like, relationships are not serious. Like being in lockdown enabled me to like get rid of that old man and to like let myself write this book. And so the first draft of it came completely in lockdown, like in the first few months of the pandemic when we were still all like really at home. I also had like other things going on where my like work had stopped because it was like dependent on classrooms being open. So I like had a sort of level of free time that was unsettling and needed to be filled. But I could not have written that book, I think, if I had never moved away.
Why?
Something about, I think because it enabled me to kind of loosen up all the judgments in my head, if that makes sense.
Was that just about being farther away from your parents or farther away from, what was the distance like, there that felt operative?
Farther away from my parents. Also, I think like farther away from my friends that I had in my 20s. Like I was very anxious even as I was writing this book about how this is going to be a little bit revealing. I think I was anxious about the judgments that I might receive for like writing this book, and writing about like an older man, younger woman relationship. And in some ways I was only really able to do it because I thought the world was ending kind of.
Right.
Yeah.
You could reasonably think, well, you know, if we're maybe nothing is going to have consequences, so I can just write this thing.
Exactly. 100%. I mean, like my parents can't even say the word sex. And then I wrote this like book with like a lot of sex in it and like a lot of like sub-dom dynamics in it. And being kind of removed from my normal networks let me like let go of like my own inner judgments and do it.
Had you been wanting to for a long time? Like, did you have this sort of in your head, or did it surprise you?
I think I had the pieces of it in my head for a long time. I knew I wanted to write a book about like the body and like the kind of internal experience of like a body under structure is like maybe how I'm going to say it. And I decided I wanted to write about dance a few months before quarantine, before lockdown, because I had gone to this residency where there were dancers, and I had never seen like live dance really like that, and I also got to see like the dance being made, which I had never seen before. And it was such a different like language and like a different way of thinking about art than writing and what I was used to, that I knew immediately, I want to figure out how to write about this because it feels as far from writing as like possible. And that like distance is like really interesting to me. But then the actual like impetus for the relationship itself didn't really come until I listened to a lot of like the relationship psychologist Esther Perel. And so the impetus for like the actual relationship itself, like me knowing that I wanted to write it, was listening to her audiobook. And she like has this chapter about, it's like just a very short part of the book. She moves on very quickly, but it like really stuck with me. It was about like strong feminist women who like realize they like to be dominated in bed and then become very like anxious about it because it feels like it's counter, like their desires are counter to their values. And it's funny, I've said that anecdote in interviews before, but as I'm saying it now, I'm realizing like, of course, that's sort of interesting to me because I kind of often feel like my desires are kind of just like, I feel like when I was talking about like the anxiety of needing to get away from the networks I was in, I'm kind of talking about that exact same thing. And I think I was interested in that because I think I have spent a lot of my life kind of trying to reconcile like different parts of me, like different, like the desire to be internal and to like be in my room reading a lot, plus the desire to like wanting to be out in the world and like acting in it and like trying to like work for change. Like those feel like, those have felt at odds at times just because, you know, we're like human beings with limited hours in the day, and that like I couldn't, like trying to figure that out. And so that part like really stuck in my head, and I knew I wanted to write a narrative about that where it was just like really deeply from the woman's point of view, and where that where she's like working on trying to reconcile that, the reconcile what feels to her like as being the difference between what she wants and in a private space and what she wants in a public space. I think I also like wanted it. I wanted that reconciliation. I just kind of think that reconciliation is something that is a process and never kind of fully ever gets resolved. And I think part of my just like getting older and kind of growing up is like kind of learning how to like accept that those tensions are there constantly, and that like that's sort of okay, that there's not like a distinct self that I just have to kind of get to at some point. Something about like writing this book kind of helps me not worry so much about the judgments in my head, or the judgments outside of my head too, I guess. Not that those don't still like affect me, but that it like loosened the hold that they had on me. Like what I was sort of trying to describe with like needing to move, like this feeling of being stuck, like and a feeling like not surveilled, but like perceived, and there being like value in the other people's perceptions. And just writing this book kind of helped me like let go of all the weight I was giving to those value-laden perceptions, of if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine there are like a couple levels on which that might be operating in writing this book, but definitely I can see why somebody who has maybe oversubscribed to the idea that what people think is important. That, like, writing a lot of graphic sex scenes, and I don't mean graphic in a bad way, I just mean graphic in, like, quite, you know, quite just descriptive of what is physically happening and of what the sensations are, and writing, like, pretty clearly about pleasure, like, that is something that a lot of people won't even touch, right? There's a lot of, because it feels like a way of being seen, even if you're not writing about your own sex life. Writing about sex is such a, I don't know, it can feel like such a meridian line or something to cross that a lot of people won't do. And you, like, you really did that here.
Yeah, totally. And not just, like, writing about, like, sex and pleasure and desire, but, like, writing about, like, a young woman's sex and pleasure and desire. It was a line I knew I wanted to cross and do with this book, but it felt hard. It felt very, like, I really had to push myself, and I wanted to get it really right for this character specifically. And having something so intimate and, like, private, like, putting it down on a paper and then, like, publishing it was very hard. but that, like, like, I, even now, when I do readings, I go into it knowing what I'm going to read. But sometimes in the middle, I'm just like, whoa, what did I do? But it's important to me to kind of drive into my own reluctances or my own fears. Because at some point, somehow I, like, realized, like, if I'm feeling reluctant or afraid of something, then, like, there's something there that I need to be leaning in harder to. At least when it comes to, like, writing. In my real life, if I'm, like, afraid of, like, bears, I should not lean into, you know, bears.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't lean into a bear if it were me.
No. No.
What was the biggest fear you had about putting this writing out? And just, like, being, I'm thinking about how we've been talking this whole time about this transition you made toward trying to feel more acutely what you wanted and what you valued, and then doing it and then going public with it, right? Which is, like, a pretty big transformation to happen in your professional life, in your mental life. What was the thing you were most afraid of was going to happen if you went public with this thing that you had done?
What's funny is that it wasn't, my greatest fear wasn't really the judgments of others, but it was more just, like, it not being, like, hurt at all, I think, was actually, or me not even doing it, I think. I think was my greatest fear. I mean, I think that's kind of your greatest fear whenever you sort of write and publish something. It's like, the worst thing isn't a bad review, but it's, like, no review at all, if that makes sense, or to use just, like, a very specific example.
Right. It's like you've taken the time and the emotional energy and the kind of thought work and the bravery to do it, and you want there to that record to matter in some way.
Yeah. And yeah, it's even in some small way, like, you know, even just, like, you know, not, like, being read by someone who is not obligated through relationship to me to read it was really important to me, or it became more important to me than any of my fears about what people might say or think about it. And that was like a really important shift or change, I think, actually, to happen for me. Because I think before I had been quite paralyzed or held back by the anxiety about like what someone might think about something that I wrote. But to kind of get to the point where like that was less important than just saying it at all, was a really big shift. And it was like it was big, but it was so like subtle that I don't think I even really noticed it until like right now as we're talking. I realized that change had occurred.
Huh.
Yeah. It's weird, but like it's such a cliche to be like just writing the book changed my life, but it did kind of change my life because of that change. It made me a little bit looser. Maybe it's not quite the right word, but like there's something to having like been in this book so deeply and then to like let it go and out into the world. And like once it's out in the world, like it's almost like I miss it, I guess. It's like because when I'm writing it, you know, you feel very inside it, and then once you have to start kind of talking about it, in order to be able to talk about it, you have to be outside of it. So like ever since I've published, I've been outside of it. And that process probably, actually, I feel like ever since I finished copy edits, I've been outside of it. But to be inside of it and then to let it go has really shifted the way I kind of think about being perceived, or like, or even just about myself.
Thresholds is produced by Drew Broussard. Music and editing by Laura Faye Ashamud of Arthur Moon. Our art is by Lorelai Grossman. Special thanks to Justin Alvarez and our hosts at LitHub Radio. You can find out more about our show, listen to past episodes, and get in touch at our website. ThisIsThresholds.com. If you're listening to this on a podcast platform and you haven't already subscribed, please subscribe. Or you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever you normally listen, and subscribe and review us there. Thanks. We'll see you next week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.